This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Bill O'Reilly here with a big announcement. You can now watch new episodes of the No Spin News live on Samsung TV Plus. Tune in each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV for breaking news, honest analysis, and the best election coverage in America. Please join me, Bill O'Reilly, at the First TV, now available on Samsung TV Plus. Start watching today on your Samsung television, Galaxy devices, or the Samsung TV Plus mobile app. Check out the No Spin News each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV, Samsung TV Plus. Hey, Bill O'Reilly here. Welcome to the No Spin News for March 20th, Wednesday, 2024, stand up for your country. Here are two facts, all right? You can write them down if you want because they're important. Since President Biden has been in office, gasoline prices are up 48% on average across the country, 48%. Since President Biden has been in office, this is the second point, food prices at the grocery stores are up an average of 23%. More in the restaurants. So just those two things alone should say, hey, Joe Biden, we'll see you around after one term. But of course, that's not happening. The race is tight because of our polarized country. And then there is the open border and the problems that stem from it. That's the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. So every day, bad things happen because of the open border. The latest is that U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Coleman in Illinois, federal judge, has dismissed firearm possession charges against an illegal migrant, Herberto Calabral Flores. So Mr. Flores was arrested in a suburb of Chicago in 2020. During the riots, with a handgun that he had not a license to carry. And he was charged in federal court, federal crime, okay, because of the immigration status. So 4 years later, he finally gets some kind of resolution. The judge throws it out, the whole case. Now, to be fair, and we are always fair, all right, the man had no criminal record, Flores, no criminal record, says he was holding the gun because of the riots and he felt threatened. It was for personal security. But nevertheless, he was not entitled to walk around with the gun. Now, here's the real interesting part of this story. The judge, Sharon Coleman, was appointed by Barack Obama. She is a flaming liberal judge. Yet she is kind of upholding the Second Amendment here, but she's really not. So this is where it really takes a wind. So in the past, the Seventh Circuit has ruled, federal court, so long as an undocumented immigrant in the United States has developed a substantial connection with the country, the Second Amendment confers to them a right to bear arms. But that's not in the Constitution. That's just a federal interpretation, a court's interpretation. She used that, this judge. But what she's really doing is giving the middle finger to gun advocates, to Second Amendment advocates, saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to dismiss all of these charges because under the Constitution, it's murky. Some constitutional rights apply if you sneak into this country illegally, like due process. But others don't. You can't vote, right? legal aliens can't vote. So it's not like the Constitution, as soon as you get here, you have all the rights. You don't. But this is a political play here. I thought it was just fascinating. And so Flores gets to stay in the country. Nobody's going to bother him. If he wants to walk around with a gun without a permit, I guess he can do it. SB4 immigration law in Texas. You remember we covered this last few days. It's Texas authorities can arrest migrants, and judges in Texas, state judges, can deport them. Well, it's, as I predicted, it's stayed again. Okay, so the New Orleans-based Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals stopped it last night. We knew that was going to happen. Eventually, this is going to go around to the Supreme Court for a full hearing. So as we reported yesterday, Supreme Court said, we're not going to block it. This happened yesterday. Supreme Court said, we're not going to block it. Throwing it back to the lower federal courts, and immediately the New Orleans federal court, which covers the district, okay, blocked it. In the end, Texas not going to be able to arrest, try, and deport illegal aliens. Clear in the Constitution, that is a federal authority. Impeachment hearing today. This is devolving quickly, which is bad news for the people who believe that Joe Biden committed a crime by taking money from his son and brother that was sent to them for no reason by foreign enterprises. I mean, it's a grift. Everybody knows it's a grift. But all this is all about Biden taking direct money or indirect. I mean, if they painted his house for free, that kind of thing. So two people showed up, Tony Bobulinski and Jason Galanis, and both were associated with Hunter Biden's business enterprises. Now, Galanis had to testify from a federal prison where he's serving a 14-year sentence for defrauding an American Indian tribe. So this is a sweetheart kind of guy that Hunter was in business with, right? So he testifies in front of the committee from a federal penitentiary where he's serving 14. It's bizarre. Bobulinski, we've heard from before. Okay, he says that Joe Biden, the president of the United States, derived money from his son and brother. Not more than that. I mean, that's what Bobulinski says. All right? Okay. But this thing doesn't seem to be going anywhere. Now, I'm not rooting one way or the other, as, you know, the partisans believe what they want to believe. People who like Biden believe it's not true. The people who hate Biden believe it is true. I'm not in either of those categories. I'd like to know. I do believe that Joe Biden helped his brother and son amass that money. I believe he knew every step of the way what was happening. That's patronage. That's, you know, I don't know whether you can get him on a federal charge for that, but he did it. I think the evidence is overwhelming that he did it. But I'd like to know if he derived, obviously, if he got money. But this impeachment hearing, this is not going to lead anywhere. Bill O'Reilly here with a big announcement. You can now watch new episodes of the No Spin News live on Samsung TV Plus. Tune in each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV for breaking news, honest analysis, and the best election coverage in America. Please join me, Bill O'Reilly, at the First TV, now available on Samsung TV Plus. Start watching today on your Samsung television, Galaxy devices, or the Samsung TV Plus mobile app. Check out the No Spin News each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV, Samsung TV Plus. All right, Schumer. So I wrote the message of the day, and again, we suggest that every morning go to BillO'Reilly.com, read the message of the day. It's free. You don't have to join. You don't have to be a member. And today I wrote about how Senator Chuck Schumer, the highest-ranking Jewish American politician in the country, is being a proxy for Biden. So Schumer is attacking Netanyahu in Israel. We all know that. It's been widely reported. Schumer wants Netanyahu out of there, okay? So Biden's not saying it, but he's using Schumer to say it because that's what Chuck does, okay? First of all, here's what Chuck said. Go.
The former president's comments were utterly disgusting and a textbook example of the kind of anti-Semitism facing Jews. pushing the dangerous anti-Semitism trope of dual loyalty.
All right, so he attacks Trump because Trump is saying, if you vote for Biden, you American Jews, okay, you're hurting Israel. Okay, how can you say you support Israel and vote for Biden? That's what Trump is saying. So Schumer immediately gets on and says, oh, you're anti-Semitic. And then CNN, MSNBC, the network news, they all follow into line. It's just crazy. As I point out in the message, Trump was very, very helpful to Israel in his 4 years. Moved the capital from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem in homage to Israel's heritage. I mean, it's just insane. Some of Donald Trump's closest associates are Jewish. His son-in-law is Jewish. Now he's anti-Semitic. Schumer should be ashamed of himself on so many levels. I mean, it's just shameful how far. I used to have a decent relationship with him. But now, he's just, ugh. This is not a partisan play either. If Biden wants to condemn Netanyahu, go ahead and do it. Don't hide behind Schumer. Now, here's a weird story on the other side. 9 House Republicans voted against a measure condemning Russia for abducting Ukrainian children. The measure says, and this is symbolic, it holds the government of the Russian Federation under the leadership of Vladimir Putin responsible for the wrongful and illegal kidnapping of children from Ukraine and officially condemns those actions in the strongest terms. That's a House resolution. Why would you vote against that? Why? Well, here are the people who did. Congressman Andy Biggs, Arizona. Eric Burleson, Missouri. Warren Davison, Ohio. Marjorie Taylor Greene, Georgia. Clay Higgins, Louisiana. Thomas Massey, Kentucky. Matt Rosendale, Montana. Chip Roy, Texas. Tom Tiffany, Wisconsin. Okay, so my staff contacted every single office. Everyone. Why'd you vote against it? Won't tell us. No public statements, no tweets, no Twitters, no Facebooks, whatever it is. So they just vote against it, and then they're disrespectful to people who call up and say, why? Oh. Yeah. Joining us now is a man who may know. His name is Kurt Mills. He's the executive director of the American Conservative, coming to us from Washington, D.C. All of the people on this list are conservative. Assume it has something to do with Ukraine, but I don't know. Do you know why they voted against it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was potentially a bit of a throwaway resolution, and it is possible that some of the members overlooked the details here. But I do think it shows more than anything the sort of headwinds that Speaker Johnson is facing in trying to get new Ukrainian funding here. The level of skepticism of the narrative around the Ukraine-Russia war, at least among the Republican rank and file, and this is aided and abetted, frankly, by the presumptive Republican nominee, is so dramatic at this point that they doubt things like fatality totals or narratives around alleged Russian kidnapping.
Okay, but no sane person could doubt that the Russians have committed atrocities and war crimes in Ukraine. The evidence is overwhelming they have. Why do you think if these people are proud of their stance not to fund Ukraine, why wouldn't they answer and explain?
I think they would just submit that it feeds into the narrative that puts us on this hawkish doom loop. I think it's a fair critique that they should have answered your criticisms, or at least answered your inquiry. And I think that you're at a point where the muscle memory is that, you know, they have certain members of Congress who are just automatically voting no on anything that is seen
and that's
as furthering
not
this
thing.
War.
If you were in the House, you wouldn't have voted no on this. I know you wouldn't have.
I'm not an elected member of Congress, but I don't see the point. And indeed, there were members of Congress, such as Congressman Gates, who either I don't know if he voted yes or he was not part of your list.
Yeah,
and so I don't. Yeah,
Andy
yeah. Biggs.
Matt Gates,
of Florida.
Gates, no, he didn't. Look.
Yeah, my point was that essentially there are Ukraine skeptical members of Congress who did not vote for this, and that seems to be
good.
Most prudent.
people should be skeptical of Ukraine. But the Republican Party and conservative movements divided on the issue. And, you know, historically, conservatives have supported blunting totalitarians like Putin. Historically, if you go all the way back to World War I, the isolationist movement in the conservative community has always been less than the isolationist movement in the liberal community. Always. All throughout history. But now it's emerging in 2024 that the isolationist movement is more prominent in conservatives' circles than liberal. And that's a change, a big change.
Well, I don't want to debate the essential nature of the fact set there, but I do think there, I don't really like the term isolationist myself. I think there have been skeptical voices throughout the last 100 years of American foreign policy that have transcended partisan alliances on both sides. And so, I mean, there was conservative opposition to World War I and even World War II up until Pearl Harbor, effectively. And so this is, in some senses, a recrudescence or a restoration of the old party of the 1920s.
Okay. So we got to deal with reality here. And the Democratic Party is united. They vote en masse and block no dissenters. We've explained why on this broadcast that if you are a Democrat in the House and you go against what the Democrats want, they cut off your money. That's Nancy Pelosi, did it for years. So whatever Biden wants, the Democrats are going to vote for it almost 100% down the line. Republicans are not like that. They have different factions and they're not united. How big an advantage is that, in your opinion, for the Democrats?
Well, I think it's a healthier political party when the dialogue isn't essentially North Korean, like you described. I do think there is some advantage for the Democrats, maybe in the short to medium term. But let's say if the Ukraine war actually becomes quite unpopular as the year goes round. I mean, I think this is quite similar to 2004 in some ways, in which you have a war that does have some bipartisan support, but is clearly championed by a partisan White House. And if it gets pretty bad in September, October, November, this could become a net liability for Biden. And, okay. And the fact that they don't have an open dialogue about it means that they actually can't course correct as quickly.
But right now, all the polls show that most American voters support blunting Putin. This isn't about Ukraine. This is about Putin and letting Putin win. And Putin is relying upon the fractious nature of our democratic government to wear us down. That's obviously his strategy. And he believes that he will. And then he'll march into whatever he wants in Ukraine. Moldova will be next, or Lithuania, or, you know, whoever. Putin's not going to stop. And then China will be emboldened to go into Taiwan. That theory, and it is a theory, is pretty well borne out by history. I mean, and the sort of question is, does the United States want to leave the defense of Ukraine at this point? I mean, I would vote for continuing to give military arms to Ukraine. That's what I would vote for. Not forever. You'd have to see progress on the battlefield. But at this point, if you let Putin win, it's going to cost us much, much more money down the road.
My own personal view is I think we needed an armistice yesterday. I mean, Crimea has effectively been under de facto Russian control for 10 years. It looks like that Russia is going to successfully annex these territories. The risks of Russia actually going into further territories like Odessa, which they are increasingly attacking, I think is something that the Biden administration needs to take very seriously. I think everybody should cut their losses here and call it a day. In terms of prioritization, I mean, look, I think you have to look at why candidates like Trump, Biden, and Obama, who have all urged for the U.S. to be less engaged in the world, more or less, over the last 15 years, have been the successful winners at the ballot box, which is that Americans look around at their relatively deteriorating neighborhoods, at their home states, and don't see why we should pick winners and losers in every theater in the world. I take your point that Russia is very important, but if that logic held absolutely, I mean, should the U.S., we apparently got the boot this week from Niger, should we really be contesting the Russians in Niger? Where do we draw the line?
Well, you draw the line on countries that don't matter, like Niger. But Taiwan matters. The chip industry there alone would cripple the United States for at least a year if the Chinese went in and took it over. TikTok aside, I mean, that's way more important. So I think you don't take the risk. You don't embolden the totalitarians. You fight them as much as you can without being ridiculous. The deterioration of American neighborhoods is because of corruption in the state and local governments, not the federal government. So anyway, that's where I stand on it, and I think I'm right. Final question. Donald Trump's not a conservative. You know that. And if you don't, read my book, The United States of Trump. He's never been a conservative. He couldn't even tell you what the conservative philosophy is. He's a deal maker. But his supporters are largely right and ultra right. They love him. Does it bother you as the director of the American Conservative that Trump really isn't conservative?
Do you think he's not nationalist or populist or center right, though?
No, I think he's populist. I think he's center right for practical reasons. Best thing that Trump did in his 4 years outside of running the economy efficiently was the appointments to the Supreme Court. If Hillary Clinton had won the election, she would have loaded it up with liberal judges. And you think it's bad now in the neighborhoods? What's happening to New York City right as we speak, because I'm here, would be happening all over the country if Hillary Clinton had won and appointed those Supreme Court justices. But Trump didn't. He appointed traditional right-leaning judges, and they're saving the country right now. But as a doctrinaire, Trump couldn't care less about conservative thought.
I think it's a fair point. I do think he is instinctually conservative, though. And I always think the Trump years have to be juxtaposed with the years that he succeeded in the conservative movement, which was the Bush years. And I think Trump looks at the open borders, free trade, sort of imperial foreign policy. And he sees that as an approach that does not preserve the way of life that he came up in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even early 90s.
Do you think the thought goes that deep, huh? Because Trump despises the Bush family, the Romneys of the world, the McCains of the world, the so-called moderate Republicans. But they're all conservative. Bush, Romney, McCain, they're all conservative. Trump has no use for them at all. None. Last
word. Agreed. I mean, I do think the thought goes deep enough. If you go back to when he was originally flirting with running for president in 1987 or 1988, he appears on Oprah Winfrey's show, and he was just saying the exact same thing then. And that was juxtaposed with the Reagan administration. The jobs were going overseas, were getting ripped off in trade. He was worrying about Japan, not China then. I do think there's more ideological consistency there than he gets credit for.
All right. We appreciate a good discussion, Kurt. Thanks for helping us out. And we'll talk again, I hope. All right. So Trump, as you know, is being punished by the state of New York unfairly. It's unconstitutional. It's on everything. Talk about it with Hannity on Hannity's radio program today. We posted that on BillO'Reilly.com. Essentially, what has happened is that the attorney general, in conjunction with a judge, New York State judge, have levied a fine against Trump designed to bankrupt him. That is against the Eighth Amendment in the Constitution. Unreasonable fines. Trump, if he has any competent lawyers at all, will win that. He'll appeal and he'll win it. Okay. But I don't know where it stands. I asked Hannity today, where does this stand? What are the Trump lawyers doing? Hannity didn't know. And I suggested that Hannity get one of the Trump lawyers on his show and say, okay, have you filed an appeal? What does the appeal say? We don't know any of this. And if Trump wants to rally support to his cause, there's no difference. He's getting illegally punished in New York State. You can quote me. And it will bear out. My words will bear out. Anyway, down in Florida, there is going to be a big soiree on April 6th featuring billionaires. It's going to be at John Paulson's home. He's a gazillionaire. And we got Woody Johnson, former ambassador to Britain. who owns the New York Jets, Todd Ricketts, co-owner of the Cubs, Chicago Cubs, casino mogul Steve Wynn, former Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, on and on and on and on. Big billionaire people. They're all going to go. If you want to be at the head table, it'll cost you $800,000. Food better be good. If you just want in to the backyard, I'm sure it'll be there. $250,000, $250,000. So this is interesting because this money that they're going to raise will be used to help Trump in the legal area. And there's some big names here. Because the very, very wealthy in America understand what the progressive left and Joe Biden is their puppet want to do. And they want to destroy capitalism. They do. And that's what these people understand. Smart Life, World Happiness Report. This comes from Gallup, which is a legitimate organization, but I take all of this very casually. So Gallup surveyed 100,000 folks in 143 countries and asked them if they're happy. All right. So here are the top 20 happy countries. Number one is Finland. We've been over this before. Denmark, Iceland, Sweden. Now, the top four, I mean, that's Scandinavia, where anything goes, very small population. Everybody's taken care of pretty much. All right. Not a lot of angst. Then you got Israel. That shouldn't be on the list because Israel is not a happy country fighting for its, literally, for its life. Netherlands, that's in a category of Scandinavia. Norway, there you go. Luxembourg, there you go. Australia, all right, they're happy down under. New Zealand, Costa Rica, Kuwait, they're not happy in Kuwait. Okay, I'm sorry. I've been to Kuwait, nobody's happy. Austria, Canada, Belgium, Ireland, Czech Republic, Lithuania, United Kingdom. It says Czechia up there. There is no such country. Okay, it's the Czech Republic. That's not our era, by the way. That was what Gallup put out. Gallup doesn't even know what the countries are. Anyway, the United States came in 23rd happiest country and 62 for citizens under the age of 30 who are unhappy because they have to work hard. They don't want to. That's why they're unhappy. I'm generalizing. My son works very, very hard, very hard. And so does my daughter. And they're both under 30. Okay, so I'm generalizing. Anyway, the angst in America, according to some analysis, is because of climate change. Everybody's afraid they're going to die. Social inequities. That means in a capitalistic system, you have winners and losers. The younger people don't want that. Want everybody the same. And political polarization, which is a problem. All of this political polarization doesn't make me happy. It gives me higher ratings. More people consume my product, and I like that. But I don't like Americans being at each other's throats. And they are. We are. So anyway, we're not in the top 20 of happy countries. Ben and Jerry's not happy because they're getting the boot from their parent company, Unilever. So in the year 2000, Unilever bought Ben and Jerry's from Ben Cohen and Jerry Greenfield to far-left loons who live in Vermont, and they are loons, okay? In my opinion, my humble opinion, they might think that they're geniuses. So Unilever paid Ben and Jerry themselves, the guys, $326 million. All right, pretty good, right? Now Unilever goes, oh, we don't want Ben and Jerry's anymore, okay? Two reasons. One is a Smart Life tomorrow where we'll say Americans are walking away from ice cream. And two is a tweet that Ben and Jerry's put out last July 4th. Quote, this 4th of July, it's high time we recognize that the U.S. exists on stolen indigenous land and commit to returning it. Learn more and take action now, Ben and Jerry's. Well, that's just ridiculous. And I wrote Killing Crazy Horse to document exactly what happened in the expansion west in this country. It's, as they say, complicated. Did Indigenous Americans get hosed? Yes, they did. But it wasn't stolen land. Sometimes, you know, Andrew Jackson, Andy, he was not in a good place with the Native Americans. But there were treaties. There were. It was complicated. But anyway, that is so outrageous to demean the 4th of July that Unilever said, you know, we don't need Ben and Jerry's. But Ben and Jerry don't care because they're not even in it. They got their money. This day in history, March 20th, 2004, Abu Ghraib scandal broke. CBS News broke it. Okay, if you don't remember, you should. Huge scandal. So after we deposed Saddam Hussein, the United States took over administrating Iraq. And we took over the Abu Ghraib prison, which is 20 miles west of Baghdad. We moved our soldiers in. We put all the Iraqi prisoners in there. A lot of terrorists. Okay. Well, some soldiers tortured these people. And 12 U.S. Army personnel were convicted. 12. Okay. Colonel Thomas Pappas, relieved of command, fined $8,000. He did not face criminal prosecution. Specialist Charles Graner, 10 years in prison. He served 6.5. And these were all done by military courts. Sergeant Ivan Frederick, 8 years in prison, served 4. Sergeant Javal Davis, 6 months in prison. Specialist Jeremy Civitz, all right, 1 year in prison. He died from COVID, 2022. Specialist Armin Cruz, 8 months confinement. Specialist Sabrina Harmon, 6 months confinement. Megan Ambul, specialist, dishonorably discharged. Private First Class Lindy England, 1 year, 5 months. She served of a 3-year sentence. Sergeant Santos Cardona, 90 days of hard labor at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. He was killed in action in Afghanistan 3 years later, working as a government contractor. Isn't that interesting? Okay, Sergeant Michael Smith served 6 months in prison. So all of those people, 12 of them, convicted of torture and Abu Ghraib. And the reason the story is so important is when that broke worldwide, the Bush administration didn't deny it and apologized for it. And that's when the whole Iraq war thing went south. Abu Ghraib, 20 years ago today. Back with some mail and a final thought about, we get a lot of mail, is America over? Is it finished? We'll do that in a final thought. Right back. All right, let's get to the mail. We got a Rachel Johnson in Phoenix, Arizona. Bill, I get that immigration can only be enforced by the federal government. States don't have the right to do that, but shouldn't they be able to protect their citizens? Can't understand why some states can protect sanctuary cities. Well, they're breaking the law if they do. But the federal government won't impose sanctions on those states. So if I'm president and Gavin Newsom says, I'm not going to enforce immigration law, federal law, I'm not telling my guys not to cooperate, I cut off as much federal money going to California as I can. That's what I do. Now, it's going to hurt the people in California, no doubt about it. And I wouldn't cut off children's and things like that, but I cut off a huge amount of money. You see how fast those sanctuary cities fall apart. But the other presidents, including Trump, didn't do it. Won't do it. Chantel Leffler, El Cajon, California. Hello, Bill O'Reilly. It might be the reason that President Biden is screaming and cursing is anonymous, because the source would lose their job if they went public. Yeah, okay, Chantal, I understand that. But how can you verify what an anonymous source tells you? You can't. And they might lie. You can't report. You can report this is said, but you can't report it as fact. That's the point. Patricia Kalin, O'Fallon, Missouri. Don't you think it was rather appropriate of Peter Doocy, Fox News White House reporter, check out the truth of what his network was reporting by asking a question. I think as a journalist, they should check out the reality by asking a question, especially of the White House press secretary. I didn't mind the question that Ducey asked, but he didn't frame it properly because there's nobody teaching him. And that's true. He's a good reporter. I mean, he spent 3 months with me and he did win a Pulitzer. You don't confront anyone on an anonymous source by saying or implying in your voice that it's true. You say NBC News reports anonymously that the president is screaming and yelling at his staff because he doesn't like the poll numbers. What do you think of NBC's report? That's how you do it. You don't do it like, hey, he's screaming and yelling at his staff. I'm sure you get it. Ron Van Tool, Canton, Georgia. If the press and networks are engaging in purposeful propaganda and breaching the intent of the free press, can they be sued? Only for defamation, and you'd have to prove malice, which would take years and millions of dollars, and you'd probably lose. That's what would happen. Kay Melavis, Rhinebeck, New York. I want to thank you, O'Reilly, for your comments on promoting adoption. I have four adopted family members, and I know the blessings they have brought into my life. You know, you would think that the federal government and states would promote adoption. Adopting a child is probably the most noble thing a responsible adult can do. I can't think of anything more noble. Do you ever hear anything about adoption? What? Crazy. It is really. Jimmy DeMichel, Montreal, Canada. Hey, Bill, what's the difference between wealth tax and property taxes? So property taxes are local, and a lot of times they go to support your schools in your town. Okay, wealth is a federal or state tax where people would come into your home with a list and say you owe that much money on your Ferrari, even though you've already bought it and paid the tax on it, okay, sales tax. Now, we want you to pay this much money on that. And that painting, you got to pay this much. That's confiscation. And if you don't, take it away from you. Communism. That's what they do. David Spano, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I've been and will continue to be a daily follower of the No Spin News as a premium member. At your suggestion, I have endured myself with a great doctor. I have insured myself, the great doctor and financial planner, but I can't find a lawyer. It's not easy. Most of these lawyers, all they want is money. They don't care about you. Oh, our fees are... Okay. You got to go local, and you got to ask your friends, you know, and canvas. It's like intel. You got to do detective work. You'll find one. All right? But ask your friends and family and this and that. You know, who in the Pittsburgh area has done a good job for you and is relatable, and you go in and you talk to them. I know it's not easy. All right, BillO'Reilly.com store. We got the self-reliance mugs. They are sweeping the country now. We've explained how important self-reliance is. We did that yesterday. If you missed it, you can access it on BillO'Reilly.com. Particularly for younger people who don't even know what self-reliance is, they need to know. Confronting the Presidents will be out September 10th. This will be a very controversial book and a book that you will learn an enormous amount. You can pre-order now. You'll get it first if you do that. BillO'Reilly.com has it. We will not bill you until we ship it to you. Word of the day, no niding. New word. N-I-D-I-N-G. Simple word. No niding. When writing to me, Bill@BillO'Reilly.com, Bill@BillO'Reilly.com. Name in town if you wish to opine. I don't see that name in town. Okay. Final thought about giving up on America in a moment. Here is the final thought of the day. So I got tons of mail going. It's hopeless. If Biden wins in November, we're all going to move to Costa Rica, or whatever it may be. Okay. So I'm not an optimist so much as a realist. And when you read Confronting the Presidents, you'll see that we have had some very hard times in America. We have a low terrible leaders, population at each other's throats. This isn't new. But we've always emerged, all right, as the noble nation we set out to be. Always. And, you know, when you start in 1776 and it's now 2024, that's a pretty good track record. All right? We don't have any violent revolutions here. We don't have any of this. Assassinations. Yeah. But I know that this country is never going to go down a drain. Now, I can't say that about my state, New York. I can't, because that's tottering right now. And if it goes any further left, the state will collapse. But the good people are going to try to get out if they can, economically. But the federal government, it's bad now. It's corrupt all over the place. It needs a reformer. It needs somebody to come in. It needs a Ronald Reagan, some charismatic person who can rally most of the folks. You know, I think it'll happen. Not going to happen like that, but I think it will. And believe me, I know more about the history of this country than most people know. 13 killing books. All right. One of them was outside the country, Jesus, which, by the way, if you haven't read it, I got a letter. How can I see the movie? It's on pay-per-view. Just put, well, you know, it was Google Killing Jesus, the movie, and boom, there it is. And you press a button and you got it. Can't be any easier. But with Easter coming up, Holy Week next week, I mean, you might want to zero in on that. And it's not boring and it's not religious. So you want to learn about it. But anyway, I know a lot about history. And when you read Confronting the Presidents, you're going to compliment me. Because Dugard and I, Martin Dugard, the co-author, I mean, we just write down, boom, no ideology at all. None. Republican and Democratic presidents are treated the same. The good, the bad, and the ugly. All right? I couldn't get Clint Eastwood in the book, but the overarch is that. So it's coming. I'll be on News Nation tonight with Chris Cuomo. That's always lively. I hope you're catching up with that. Thank you for watching the No Spin News. We'll see you again tomorrow. Bill O'Reilly here with a big announcement. You can now watch new episodes of the No Spin News live on Samsung TV Plus. Tune in each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV for breaking news, honest analysis, and the best election coverage in America. Please join me, Bill O'Reilly, at the First TV, now available on Samsung TV Plus. Start watching today on your Samsung television, Galaxy devices, or the Samsung TV Plus mobile app. Check out the No Spin News each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV, Samsung TV Plus.